welcome to Misunderstood, a podcast dedicated to better understanding MS and learning to live well with MS. I'm your host, Katie Sloan. Our usual reminders as we begin, I am not an expert, just a person like you living with MS and trying to make the best of it. Misunderstood is based on my personal experience, what I've learned from my doctors, other care providers, and my own solutions-oriented research and pattern-finding obsession. While the majority of the information I share has been vetted by doctors, I am not a doctor. My intention is that you use the information shared here as a springboard for discussion between you and your doctor regarding your future care options. Lastly, MS impacts each of us uniquely. I hope to shine a light on a wide range of approaches and strategies for living better with MS. But what you choose to do with that information is always your choice, and what works for one may not work for all. In our previous episode, we talked about apathy and anhedonia. I hope it was helpful to better understand these two debilitating symptoms many of us experience along the journey, and to look at a variety of avenues for support and healing. This week, since we're in the midst of summer in the Northern Hemisphere, and I'm seeing a lot of posts in various MS groups about our collective limitations due to heat sensitivity, we're going to return to a topic we first discussed way back in season 1 in episode 13, which was called Help, My Personal Thermostat is Broken. In that episode, we learned the basics about heat intolerance and how heat and humidity impact our bodies as people living with MS. Today, we'll take things a step further. If you're curious about heat sensitivity, and even more so, curious if there's anything we can actually do about it, you're in the right place. For our gratitude portion today, I am grateful for you, and I actually have a favor if you're interested. Here's the deal. I was asked to speak to a group of Stanford fellows next month. They have a summer training session where the focus this year is on neurological care, and specifically a handful of neurologic conditions, including MS. They'd like for me to share the patient perspective, what trauma-informed neurologic care, in my opinion, looks and feels like, and what we'd like new doctors to know about our lived experiences with MS. While I certainly have my own experience and opinion to share while I'm with the fellows, if possible, I'd like to be more inclusive and create some handouts for the fellows to take with them that share a larger scope of our collective experience and what we believe an ideal patient-doctor-therapeutic encounter would look like. These are new doctors, folks, and this is a great way to slowly bring about the change we'd like to see in our neurologic care. If you'd like to share some of your thoughts, I've developed a short anonymous questionnaire where you can share your experiences. The deadline for your input to be included is Sunday, August 10th. I'll post the survey link on our Patreon page, visible to all. Thank you in advance for your consideration. And to those who choose to complete the questionnaire, my sincere thanks. Okay, let's dive into today's topic. Do you struggle with MS heat sensitivity? Do your symptoms flare when you overdo it? Do you find yourself less able to spend time outdoors during the summer months? Do you retreat from socializing or other activities because of the heat? Does that negatively impact your mood? If any of these questions resonate with you and you're not a fan of MS heat sensitivity and all that comes with it, this episode is for you. And guess what? While it might really suck for you right now, like it did for me, the great news is that the time to actually start deliberate acclimatization strategies, if that's something you decide to try for yourself after listening to this episode, will be here very soon, once the worst of the summer heat breaks. And next summer could be a noticeably different experience for you. So now is exactly the right time to increase our knowledge base about MS and heat sensitivity and start to develop our own unique acclimatization plans and goals. In this episode, we'll address some temperature basics, We'll learn about how living with MS impacts our body's natural abilities to withstand hot and cold temperatures. We'll learn strategies to alleviate MS heat sensitivity and cold sensitivity. We'll explore deliberate acclimatization strategies for both heat and cold to widen our current zone of comfort. And we'll learn about safety concerns specific to those of us who live with neurological heat sensitivity that we need to take into consideration as we contemplate developing a personalized acclimatization plan to best fit our needs and our goals. By listening to this episode, you'll be able to start thinking about what your own acclimatization plan could look like. As we go, I'll share a bit about my personal journey over time with heat and cold sensitivity to add context. Keep in mind that just like our MS manifests uniquely, we are all unique in how our bodies react to heat and cold. Let's start with learning about the average healthy human's comfortable temperature range to see how we, as individuals living with MS, might compare. The ideal temperature for humans is surprisingly narrow. While individual preferences can and do vary, especially if we live in an area with significantly higher or lower temperatures and are used to it, most humans find the most comfort within a very specific range. In general, 68 degrees Fahrenheit to 77 degrees Fahrenheit, or 20 to 25 degrees Celsius. This range is often referred to as the thermal neutral zone, and this range is the temperature at which our body can easily maintain its core temperature without expending extra energy to do so. There are some factors that can further affect our human comfort. Humidity. High humidity can make it feel warmer, while low humidity can make it feel cooler. Clothing. The fabric type and amount of clothing we wear can influence our comfort level and our ability to adapt to changing temperatures. Activity level. People engaged in physical activity tend to prefer cooler temperatures. Individual preferences. Some people naturally prefer warmer or cooler environments. Personal comfort can vary significantly based on individual factors. Age. Did you also know that older adults tend to be more sensitive to temperatures? Children have higher metabolic rates and often prefer cooler temperatures. Gender. Women often report being colder than men, especially during times where they experience fluctuations in hormones. During particular phases of life where hormones change quickly, like during puberty, pregnancy, perimenopause, and menopause, many women tend to struggle with hot flashes and temperature regulation. Health conditions can also impact our comfort. Folks that live with metabolic disorders, for example, can struggle with temperature regulation. Folks with circulatory issues also struggle with temperature sensitivity due to impaired blood flow. Some medications even affect our ability to regulate temperature. There are some other medical conditions that can also impact our ability as humans to regulate our temperature, like hypothyroidism. This condition can slow down metabolism, leading to feel cold. Hyperthyroidism. Overactive thyroid can cause increased body temperature. Diabetes can affect blood flow and nerve function, impacting temperature regulation. Raynaud's disease. This condition causes blood vessels to narrow, leading to cold extremities. Fevers. Infections and illnesses can elevate body temperature. And, as we know, multiple sclerosis often involves issues with temperature control. All right, so now that we know the basics for a healthy human and how some specific health conditions can impact our comfort in various temperatures, let's narrow our focus to better understanding heat sensitivity in MS and what might be possible for us in terms of building our tolerance over time. Heat sensitivity is a common challenge for people living with multiple sclerosis. About 80% of people living with MS experience heat sensitivity, and an elevated body temperature can temporarily worsen our neurological symptoms. While training our body to acclimate to high temperatures over time in the traditional sense, like for athletes, is not generally something widely recommended for those of us living with MS due to the underlying neurological issues we have, there are many effective strategies to help us better prevent and manage heat intolerance to minimize its impact. And some acclimatization is possible for many of us, especially if we are somewhat stable in terms of progression and disease activity. The only way to know for sure how well we can acclimate is to try. Doing so slowly with caution, however, is imperative. Heat can make the symptoms of MS worse, but it doesn't typically cause new symptoms, additional damage, or disease progression. Symptoms almost always improve quickly after cooling down. For some, it may take a bit longer, but it's typically minutes or hours rather than days. So, while it can be very uncomfortable in the moment, it's typically not very dangerous. Heat sensitivity is also known as Uthoff's phenomenon, Uthoff's sign, or Uthoff's syndrome. This is a temporary worsening of MS symptoms that can occur when the body is exposed to heat, such as from hot weather, high humidity, exercise, fever, sauna, or hot tubs. Let's take a moment to talk about how and why heat triggers or worsens our symptoms. Heat can worsen our symptoms because our nerves that have lost their conductive and insulating coating, called myelin sheath, become more sensitive to heat. Like frayed wires, this can cause our nerve impulse signals to slow down or be blocked completely, which can lead to an increase in our symptoms. Heat can also significantly affect our nervous system's ability to regulate our internal temperature, which can result in decreased ability to properly sweat, which in turn prevents our ability to experience evaporative cooling, which most people depend on to stay cooler longer in warmer environments. Let's talk about heat sensitivity symptoms. Any MS symptom can worsen with heat, but the most common include fatigue. Reduced energy can limit our ability to complete even the simplest of daily tasks and can make even gentle exercise feel near impossible. We also might experience cognitive difficulties, struggles with attention and concentration, brain fog, and even slowed physical reaction times. We might experience muscle weakness. Weaker muscles can make it harder to balance when standing, walking, or transferring, which can also increase the risk of falling, opening the door to more substantial consequences and challenges. We might also experience blurred vision or other visual disturbances like spots, double vision, auras, or flares. Headaches or migraines, numbness or tingling, especially in our extremities. We might also experience tremors, muscle spasticity, and increased pain, dizziness or vertigo, increased bladder and bowel issues, increased dehydration. These symptoms manifest uniquely in each of us. While Uthoff's phenomenon for me includes experiencing disturbing odd sensations in my arms and legs and on the right side of my face, visible inflammation and loss of fine motor in both hands, increased muscle spasticity and allodynia, which is skin pain. The most serious issue for me by far has been my vision. When overheated, it would start with brown spots and a dimming of color. This was often accompanied by migraines and pain deep in my eye sockets. And if I didn't get myself cooled off quickly, my vision would start to darken on the sides and dim to a more grayscale outlook, which, as someone who lost 100% of their vision in their right eye for many months, and still almost 10 years later has inconsistent color vision in that eye, this was honestly pretty scary. Even with a significant desire to be outside, it clearly felt very unsafe for me to do so. My fears over time grew, and after I moved to an even warmer climate, it became more difficult. I began to socially withdraw during the hottest summer months because I didn't want to risk getting stranded somewhere and overheat, becoming unable to get myself home safely. This was really hard for me as an outdoorsy and fiercely independent person. So, what can we do to help minimize heat sensitivity or to help ourselves feel better once we are experiencing symptoms of heat sensitivity? While many strategies for recovery from heat sensitivity are the same or very similar to the strategies recommended to avoid heat sensitivity. So as we go through them, be thinking which might be helpful for you to consider. Number one, prioritize cooling and avoid overheating. Stay in air-conditioned environments during the hottest parts of the day. This is perhaps the most crucial step. During hot weather or heat waves, spend as much time as possible in air-conditioned spaces like your home, office, or public spaces. Strategic scheduling. If we want or need to be outdoors or active, we can plan activities for the coolest parts of the day, typically early morning or late evening. Avoid strenuous activities during peak heat hours. Pre-cooling. Cooling our body before exposure to heat or activity can help us be more resilient to heat. This can involve taking a cool shower or bath. We might also consider Wim Hof cold blasts at the end of our showers, or use ice foot baths to help cool our core temperature. We can wear cooling vests or other cooling garments. Merino wool is my favorite. It regulates temperature for us. We might think that wool would be counterintuitive for heat sensitivity, but it's actually an excellent choice, especially merino wool. Why? Well, merino wool wicks moisture away from the body. This helps regulate our body temperature and prevent overheating, which is something our bodies struggle to do when we live with MS. Unlike many synthetic fibers, wool can absorb up to 30% of its weight in moisture without feeling wet. This helps us to be more able to maintain a consistent and safe body temperature. Since wool is so breathable, it allows air to circulate around our body, preventing heat buildup. While merino wool can help a lot with heat sensitivity, it isn't a miracle cure. But paired with other tools, it can make a big difference to our comfort and safety. In the last 3 years, I've actually converted almost my entire wardrobe to merino wool because it helps me so much. Hydration. Drinking ice-cold fluids before and during exposure and exercise, because being fully hydrated can minimize or slow our heat-related symptoms. Cooling during activity or when we are exposed to heat. Take frequent breaks in cool, shaded areas. I use a timer to try to embrace my pace by stopping frequently to do a quick body scan just to make sure I'm doing okay. To stay cool during activity, we can make sure we drink water regularly. By sipping cool, icy drinks or eating popsicles, we can stay cooler in heat longer. If I'm sitting outside in the heat, I'll often fill my foot tub with ice and put it under the table. We can also mist ourselves with a spray bottle filled with cold water. Also helpful are neck fans or Frog Tog evaporative cooling towels. We can also apply cool compresses or wet towels to pulse points, our wrists, necks, armpits, and groin. Post-activity cooling. It's wise for us to cool down immediately after any heat exposure or activity to help our symptoms subside. We can take cool showers, drink cold beverages, and eat cold foods. And cool, breathable clothing helps a lot too, as does being in an air-conditioned space. We also use cooling eucalyptus dog blankets. Our dogs love them, and I use one too in warmer months, especially when my pups want to sit on my lap. Number two, hydration is paramount. We need to drink plenty of cool fluid so we can stay well hydrated throughout the day, even if we don't feel thirsty. Water is best. If you're not convinced just how critical water is for us, check out episode 95, The Healing Power of Water for MS Symptoms. Who knew how many symptoms of ours can be exacerbated by dehydration? It was certainly eye-opening research for me and has changed my water drinking habits significantly these past months. Electrolytes. For prolonged activity in warmer conditions, consider electrolyte-containing sports drinks to replenish lost salts. However, be mindful of sugar content, as sugar can also cause adverse symptoms for us. We also should avoid dehydrating beverages. Limit our caffeine, coffee, tea, soda, energy drinks, and alcohol, as they can be diuretics, increase fluid loss through urination, and easily lead to dehydration. Number three, modify exercise and activity. Exercise in cool environments. If exercising, do so in an air-conditioned gym, a cool pool where the water temperature is below 85 degrees Fahrenheit or 29 degrees Celsius, or outdoors during cooler times of the morning or evening. Lower intensity or shorter duration of our exercise. Reduce the intensity and shorten the duration of our workouts in warmer conditions. Even Qigong or chair yoga are very effective forms of exercise for us. Water-based exercise is an excellent choice. Swimming or water therapy can be great options as the water helps keep our body cool. Listen to our body. Pay close attention to our symptoms. If they worsen, stop, cool down, and rest. Number four, environmental controls can be very helpful. Fans. Use fans to circulate air and promote evaporative cooling. I even use a fan on my outside patio table to keep the air moving. It helps a lot. Close blinds and curtains. Keep blinds and curtains closed during the day to block direct sunlight and keep interior rooms cooler. Blackout curtains work really well for this. Keeping our homes cool creates a temperature-safe sanctuary for us. Avoid heat-generating activities. Limit using ovens, stovetops, and other heat-generating appliances, especially during hot parts of the day. My partner often uses the barbecue outside to cook for us on hot days, or we use the air fryer or Instapot, or eat chilled salads like Depression-era salad or quick-pickled vegetables that are stored in the refrigerator and make easy meals to grab when it's too hot to cook comfortably. We also batch cook, so on really hot days where we don't feel like cooking, we have ready-made healthy meals available at the ready. LED lighting. We can switch to LED bulbs, which produce less heat than incandescent or CFLs. Bonus, our smart lights are also a low-intensity chocolate color that soothes my optic nerve. My NeuroTint glasses help with that too, especially with screen usage. Unplug electronics. Unplugging devices when not in use is wise, as they can generate unnecessary heat. There are some important considerations to keep in mind as we explore heat sensitivity. The first is consult your healthcare provider. Before attempting any acclimatization or significant changes to your current temperature or exposure routine, discuss your heat sensitivity and current health management strategies with your neurologist or your MS healthcare team. They can provide personalized advice and ensure your strategies are safe and appropriate for you. Individual variation. Heat sensitivity varies greatly among people with MS. What works well for one person might not be as effective for another. Experiment with different strategies and tools to find what provides the most relief for you. And start slow. Listen to your body. This is crucial. If you start to feel overheated or your symptoms worsen, stop what you're doing and initiate cooling measures. Meditation and body scans can help us better learn to listen to our body's signals. Temporary exacerbation. Remember that heat-induced symptom worsening is temporary. Symptoms should subside once we cool down. By consistently implementing these strategies and utilizing appropriate tools, we can effectively manage heat sensitivity and improve our comfort and quality of life with MS. Now, important to also consider is that while maintaining or returning to our comfort zones provides relief, relying too heavily on them all the time can actually sabotage our body's natural adaptive capabilities over time, which is apparently particularly true for temperature regulation. It's an interesting paradox, and I definitely noticed that for myself when I stayed consistently in my comfort zone, which was a quite narrow 68 to 72 degrees Fahrenheit, or 20 to 22 degrees Celsius. This concept was a topic I researched voraciously, and this is what I learned. By maintaining a constant 68 to 72 degree Fahrenheit environment, I was affecting my thermal resilience. I was doing this in several ways. One, I was weakening my thermoregulatory systems. By prioritizing my comfort too much, I experienced reduced practice. Our bodies are designed to adapt to a range of temperatures. When we constantly live in a narrow thermal zone, the physiological mechanisms responsible for heating and cooling us down, like sweating, shivering, vasoconstriction, and vasodilation, don't get sufficient exercise. That eventually leads to a less efficient response. Over time, these systems can become less responsive or efficient. When we are then suddenly exposed to temperatures outside our comfort zone, our body might struggle more than ever to adjust effectively. For example, we might sweat less or later when we're in the heat, or shiver more intensely and sooner in the cold, compared to someone who more regularly experiences a wider range of temperatures. It also results in lowered thermal resilience, the ability of our body to withstand and recover from temperature-induced stress. We become more sensitive to even minor deviations from our preferred temperature range. This is definitely what I experienced after being quite limited in my exposures for about 5 years. It seemed like it was getting worse over time for me, which was really difficult to experience. It also made me even more fearful for the future and was impacting what I felt was safe and comfortable to do. When we prioritize our comfort over time, it can also impact our metabolic rate. Our metabolic systems are designed to minimize their effort. The thermal neutral zone, which overlaps with our typical comfort zone, is the temperature range where our body expends the least amount of energy to maintain its core temperature. Staying consistently in this zone means our body doesn't need to work hard to generate or dissipate heat. We might also have less brown fat activity. Exposure to mild cold, for example, can stimulate brown adipose tissue, BAT, which is a type of fat that generates heat by burning calories. If we're always comfortable, our BAT might be less active, potentially impacting our metabolism and even our weight management. Who knew? It also impacts our behavioral adaptation and expectations in several ways, one of which is learned helplessness. We become accustomed to a consistent temperature, and our psychological expectation for thermal comfort narrows even more. When we then deviate from this, we perceive discomfort more intensely and are quicker to seek ways to return to our preferred zone, rather than persevering and allowing our body time to adapt. We may also experience reduced tolerance. This can lead to a lower tolerance for minor temperature fluctuations. A slightly warm room might feel unbearable, or a slightly cool breeze might trigger immediate discomfort simply because we're not used to it. This is definitely something I experienced, and it was getting worse over time. There are also actually potential health implications, like decreased vascular flexibility. The repeated constriction and dilation of blood vessels in response to temperature changes contribute to our vascular health. Constant, stable temperatures might not provide this beneficial workout for our circulatory system. Reduced immune system stimulation. Some theories suggest that mild thermal stress, both hot and cold, can stimulate certain aspects of the healthy immune system response. And sleep issues. While a cooler room, 60 to 67 degrees Fahrenheit, is generally recommended for optimal sleep, a constantly warm environment can disrupt our sleep patterns. Since much of our body's repair systems work when we're asleep, this can lead to more health issues over time and slower recovery times. It's important to note that for individuals like us living with MS, training our body to acclimatize to a wider range of temperatures in the same way as a healthier person might not be wise. And often what's advised most for us is symptom management and avoiding overheating rather than attempting to deliberately push our boundaries of heat tolerance. What happens, though, if the symptoms we are experiencing from the limitations of heat sensitivity, like depression, anxiety, social withdrawal, or fear-like phobias, are intense, and we want to see if we can try to increase our range of comfort? First, we need to be aware of the unique risks we face as folks living with MS when interested in attempting acclimatization, since it won't be as simple as it would be for someone who is fully healthy. It's important these be on our radar so we can adjust course as needed. In terms of higher risks for us, we might experience increased symptom burden, worsening fatigue, vision issues, weakness, balance problems, cognition, and more. We might also experience a reduced quality of life, limiting our activities, increasing our pain and discomfort, and potentially feeling unwell more often. And safety concerns. Impaired balance or vision due to heat could lead to falls or accidents. We might decide that our narrow comfort zone is an important protective measure for us against symptom exacerbation, and that our goal may well be to avoid heat rather than try to adapt to it. And that's okay. That's certainly the space I was in for quite some time. As someone not great at admitting I can't do things, I decided that since I had been stable for a number of years and my doctor felt it was safe, that it was worth trying. But I want to be very clear that this is a very personal decision that we each need to make for ourselves and with the support of our care team. Online, I was able to find numerous positive stories about people like us living with MS who have successfully found ways to better manage heat sensitivity, improved their ability to withstand heat, all leading to a better quality of life. According to these stories, there are several trends they had in common. One, they each took time to identify their unique heat sensitivity triggers. Through paying attention to their body, their body's reactions to various stimuli, and patterns over time. Great places to start are to note how you handle direct sun exposure, strenuous exercise, hot showers, illnesses, especially those that are accompanied by a fever and high humidity. I found it interesting that some folks actively monitor their weather using apps to ensure better planning. While general weather apps can be useful, apps monitoring humidity or barometric pressure can be very helpful. Barometric pressure, for example, can have a huge impact on sinusitis, which many of us have and may not even know it. If you're curious to learn more about that, check out episode 42, The Perfect Storm, Sinusitis and Barometric Pressure with MS. Tracking barometric pressure over time has been very helpful and informative for me in predicting when I might struggle. Secondly, successful folks weren't adverse to making adjustments to their exercise routines, since exercise is a common trigger for heat sensitivity. For example, people moved their exercise indoors, lowered the temperatures of water, did lower impact exercises like Tai Chi, Qigong, or chair yoga, and scheduled outdoor events either very early or very late in the day to avoid the peak heat of the day. The third common trend was that folks had convenient access to a cool sanctuary, whether that be at home, in the freezer section of the supermarket, their local ice skating rink, or at their local gym. This cool sanctuary provides a safe place to quickly escape to if the heat starts to become too much. Being able to cool ourselves quickly can alleviate symptoms faster. Never underestimate the power of a cold shower or even a foot dip in a nearby creek. Spending time before to prepare our body and after heat exposure is most recommended. People who successfully have found ways to mitigate heat sensitivity also drink a lot of water, and fairly continuously, rather than just before or after an activity. Some folks add lemon or other fruits to their water to make it more enticing. Planning to imbibe in water drinking during activities helps tremendously. See episode 95, The Healing Power of Water for MS Symptoms, for more information on just how important water is for us. Number five, folks also aren't shy about using cooling aids like cooling vests, breathable clothes, protective hats, cooling towels, etc., to help keep our core temperature as low as possible in the heat. Other popular tools are portable and even wearable fans. Number six, dietary adjustments help too. Eating lighter and cooler foods, especially those with a high water content, like cucumbers, pineapple, and watermelon, can help reduce the increased internal temperature of our body when it's working on digesting a meal for us. Number seven, it's also important to exercise self-compassion and shift our mindset from a place of fear and fighting the heat to a place of acceptance. Accepting that we live with heat sensitivity and finding ways to proactively adapt our lifestyle to our new set of needs. Shifting our mindset in this way reduces stress and improves our overall well-being and belief in what's possible. Experimenting on ourselves is often a process of trial and error. Folks who were able to successfully find ways to better cope with heat sensitivity and better acclimate their bodies to heat demonstrated perseverance, a willingness to try new things, as well as patience and self-compassion in the process. Listening to our bodies along the way and being able to recognize the early signs we each manifest as we are exposed to heat and then taking aligned action is an important part of learning to cope with heat sensitivity. Lastly, folks shared that strategizing with their healthcare teams to develop personalized symptom management and acclimatization plans was a key factor in their successes with improving heat sensitivity. Are you starting to think about what might be possible for you and how to go about developing a strategic plan to approach heat sensitivity? Before I share more about my plan as an example, I want to first address fear. Because staying in a place of fear can keep us in a place of inaction. And if nothing changes, nothing changes. So addressing our fears is really a critical first step with any major change we're trying to make when living with a condition like MS. Even though we know that many of our heat-induced symptoms are temporary and will not cause new or permanent damage, it can still be kind of or very scary when we know that we can very quickly lose ability in the heat. Let's take a moment to validate that fear as very real. It makes sense that we might be nervous about intentionally trying to acclimatize through heat exposure, especially if we've experienced frightening reactions in the past. So let's normalize and validate the fear we feel. We're not alone in that. Uthoff's phenomenon is a real physiological response. This isn't just about feeling uncomfortable. Our body genuinely reacts to temperature change differently, and our symptoms temporarily worsen. This is very real and very valid. Acknowledging this challenge is important, and tapping into our why is also critical. Why do we want to be able to withstand heat better? What are some things we might be able to do again if we manage to improve our ability to lessen the impacts of heat on our body? How would that make us feel to be able to do these things again? Take some time to really think about what might be possible. Another helpful reminder is to remind ourselves that acclimatization isn't necessarily only about being able to endure the heat. It's also very much about learning to prevent, manage, and mitigate its effects so that we can do more of what we love. Focusing on what we'll gain helps keep us motivated. Heat acclimatization is all about finding our personal pathway to return to doing the things we love in ways that are safe, while utilizing our full toolbox of tools and strategies to make it possible. We might not do things the same way as we did before, but we can almost always eventually find a workaround with time and consistent effort. The key to approaching acclimatization and building better endurance in heat is very personalized. This is one of the hardest aspects of MS for many of us, since what works for one doesn't work for all of us. We each need to forge our own path and discover, often through trial and error, what works for us. Approaching this puzzle with realistic expectations, curiosity, a loose timeline, a clear why, a wide range of empowering tools and strategies, and support from our care team, family, and friends can help us find our solution pathway sooner than later. The number one rule of success here is listening to our body. When we feel symptoms worsening or we get too uncomfortable, that's our body's signal that it's time to stop and cool down. When we take this process slowly, with gradual and intentional exposure, it might first look like spending just a few minutes in a slightly warmer environment with our cooling tools nearby on hand. Slowly, over time, as our tolerance expands, we can increase our challenge. Just like building any muscle or habit, it takes time. As we slowly expand our comfort zone, we'll find that we can do more and more of what we love. That helps further fuel our fire, and focusing on what we're gaining can help diminish our fears and make us even more hopeful for the future. So, what on earth have I done that has worked for me? What I'll share here is that this obsession all started for me about 3.5 years ago, when my mother-in-law unexpectedly passed away in January. My partner and I spent the next 6 months busily closing out her estate. It was a lot of work and involved a lot of travel since we lived several hours away. What happened as a result was that we were so busy the first half of the year that I missed spending time outside in the cooler weather that spring as it slowly got warmer because we were so busy. And so the summer of 2022 was noticeably more miserable for me heat-wise than any before. Once I finally had time to spend outside, I simply couldn't safely. It was way too big of a jump in heat. So I spent much of that summer indoors in the AC, since I experienced heat-inducing symptoms starting at 72 degrees Fahrenheit. And it was often 30 to 40 degrees warmer than that here during those hottest months. As someone who loves being outside, it was a very depressing summer, of course, compounded by our recent loss. I sometimes didn't step foot outside for days, and I began to experience depression, apathy, anhedonia. Those are things I hadn't really experienced since my diagnosis. I so badly wanted to be outside. This was a very dark time for me. Since my vision was heavily impacted by heat exposure, I didn't feel safe being outside beyond 72 degrees, which was the threshold where I often started experiencing those distressing heat sensitivity symptoms. Because of the symptoms I'd experience, in addition to not feeling like I could safely be outside, I also didn't feel like I could safely drive anywhere independently. I had a bad case of the limiting what ifs. What if my car died and it was hot outside and I had to walk or wait for help? What if I got overheated driving because my air conditioning didn't work well enough? Or I got in an accident because I couldn't see very well, or had a migraine, or was experiencing heat or vision-induced vertigo? What if the heat impacted my legs as it often did, and I couldn't get myself to safety? Despite wearing UPF gloves while driving, what if the heat took away my fine and gross motor ability of my arms and hands again? What if my iPhone wouldn't recognize my fingerprint so I could call for help? Yeah, that happened. Or what if the heat-induced nerve pain on the right side of my face became permanent? What if? What if? What if? This was very fear-based thinking, but I get why I was feeling this way, as I had lost a lot of functionality in 2015 to transverse myelitis and 100% of my vision in my right eye in 2016. Both of these were terrifying experiences I did not want to revisit. In the depths of depression, and yes, even optimists can experience depression, even though I was surrounded by a beautiful, colorful, and cheerful garden, I didn't feel safe enough to be outside to enjoy it. It was a dark time for me, and I even questioned if I needed to move to another climate. This one symptom was drastically impacting my life and my ability to be happy. And at the time, I thought there were no solutions. Change just didn't seem at all possible. In fact, it seemed like every year things were getting worse. Looking back now to this difficult time, I am oddly grateful because it got so hard for me that it sparked interest in researching if there was any way I could possibly get better acclimated to warm weather safely as someone living with MS. What I learned was that it turns out there is. And early fall is the perfect time to start preparing ourselves for next summer. First, depending on the weather patterns of where you live, you will need to adjust your plan accordingly. To help you modify my acclimatization plan to better fit your climate, here's a quick overview of the weather here to compare to yours. Where I live, summer weather is quite toasty. July and August are almost exclusively in the 90s, or often even triple digits. Last year, we topped out at a toasty 118. So far this year, I think the highest we've seen has been 111. On rare nights, our temperature stays around 70 degrees, but gratefully more often drops into the 60s. Slight overall cooling begins in September, where the highs often drop into the mid to high 80s. By October, we see low 80s or 70s during the day, with nighttime temperatures dipping into the 40s. And then in November, the lows dip into the 30s or occasionally lower, with the highs of low 60s. Our low temperature last winter was 22 degrees. The highs stay all winter, typically through March, below the mid-60s, rising slowly through April and May. By June, we are again into the mid to high 80s, or on rare occasions, even warmer. Since cold weather is significantly easier for us to adjust to, and since most places see a gradual warming trend in spring, that's why the best time to start acclimatization efforts is actually in the fall. Yes, in the fall. As our body becomes more comfortable in the colder temperatures, we are extending its comfort zone in an easier direction. That in turn allows us to slowly handle more heat at the other end of the spectrum as well. I will say that it was much easier for me to adjust to the cold, while it took until the second summer to notice a significant change with managing heat. If you're doubting your patience, please know that it was 100% worth it. As we continue to discuss heat sensitivity and deliberate acclimatization today, stay curious and think about what might be possible for you. Gradual acclimatization to cold weather is easier for most of us than acclimatizing to hot weather. This is really important and was a clue in the research for me that starting my acclimatization efforts at the end of the summer was the wisest place to start to ease my body slowly into change. The temperatures at first were fairly mild, and as it gradually got colder and colder, I was able to bundle up and use some of the following strategies. Start slow. To safely train our bodies to withstand colder temperatures, it's wise that we start with very short periods of exposure and gradually increase the duration. I started slowly and worked my way up to a minimum of an hour outdoors every day, regardless the weather. I gratefully have a covered patio, so I had some shelter on the wildest winter weather days. Clothing matters. Layering temperature-regulating clothing, like merino wool, helps to support our bodies as we adjust to these changing conditions. And these smart fabrics adjust our temperature for us if needed, since for many of us, our inner thermostats aren't functioning correctly. Wearing warm, waterproof clothing, gloves, and hats in cold, wet weather helps a lot and also protects our exposed skin from wind and cold. After cold exposure, it's wise to warm ourselves up gradually indoors before going outside again. One easy way to do this is to drink warm beverages or eat warm foods to help raise our body temperature. Sometimes I'd even take a warm beverage outside with me. This helped me as I was slowly extending my exposure time. That first fall and early winter, I worked my way up to spending a minimum of an hour outside each day. At first, I would have my phone with me or read a book or listen to a guided meditation. It wasn't long, however, before I started to enjoy just being in the yard, watching the seasonal changes and wildlife. If you've ever done this before, it's pretty wild to watch the incremental changes day to day that we otherwise miss when we're busy or indoors. Watching the leaves fall over time and the shift into the winter landscape and the changing angles of the sun is very peaceful and reminds us just how connected we are meant to be to our planet. It helps us recall how our ancestors lived before modern humans built up the land into concrete and steel landscapes and shelters that keep out all aspects of the weather happening outside. These artificial environments we've created are convenient and pose serious challenges to us as well. I also became such a constant in the yard that even the birds started to treat me and our dogs as safe and constant part of the environment. It was really neat to make new friends in my yard. And yes, even the dogs got used to the birds. That first year, I also resumed my monthly salt floats that I had put on pause during the pandemic. Winter provided the perfect opportunity to start slowly raising the water temperature of my floats. When I first started, I spoke with the owner about my heat sensitivity, and they gratefully lowered the temperature for me by about 5 degrees. The usual temperature is intentionally around skin temperature, 93.5 to 94.5 degrees Fahrenheit, for maximum therapeutic experience. The idea is that the water will be the same temperature as our skin, and so the barrier between our skin and the water becomes less of a sensory focus. In a deprivation tank, the idea is to reduce the sensory stimulation. So if our skin can't really feel anything against it and it's dark and quiet, this deprivation experience can quite substantially calm a hypervigilant central nervous system stuck in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. So starting at a lower temperature, and sometimes I'd even leave the tank door open to dissipate the heat more quickly, since sometimes the tank can get pretty humid, was a great way to ease my body into expanding my zone of comfort. And since I started this in the winter, the warm water actually felt really good. If you've listened to episode 46, The Benefits of Float Therapy for MS, you'll know that floating on 11,000 pounds of Epsom salt is magnificent for muscle pain and spasticity, which for many of us is exacerbated by both hot and cold temperatures. So this was a very soothing self-care practice, and I still do it monthly, years later. It's a very necessary part of my symptom management plan. Once I spent that first winter getting more used to the cold and deliberately testing my ability to withstand higher heat, I was ready for spring, to start deliberately exposing myself to the slowly rising temperatures throughout the spring months. Here's what the research suggests in terms of early season heat exposure to help train our bodies to better withstand a wider range of temperatures. Start slow. Begin with short periods of mellow activity in the gently rising heat, such as a 15-minute walk. Sometimes I wouldn't even leave my yard, I'd just circle the perimeter. Do what you need to do to feel safe, even if you're just sitting in one spot. Increase the duration. Gradually increase the time spent in the heat and the intensity of the activity in the heat over several days or weeks. Go as slow as needed to maintain your personal comfort. Listen to our body. Pay attention to signs of heat-related symptoms like dizziness, nausea, fatigue, vision disturbances, or flares of other MS symptoms. If we're not yet adept at listening to our body, it might be easy for some, but this took me several years to learn. Don't hesitate to set timers to help maintain safe exposure limits. Better to go too slow than too fast. Monitor our health. Be aware of our unique heat-related symptom manifestations and more serious conditions like heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Remember, it takes time for our body to acclimatize. It's important that we be patient and listen to our body. If at any time we experience severe symptoms, it's important to seek medical attention. Throughout these spring months, as the temperature slowly started to rise, I tried to add outdoor activities in the mornings in addition to my hour of exposure. Luckily, our garden offers many opportunities, as there's always something that needs pruning, weeding, picking, or attending to. And our pups are always up for a walk. That first summer, after my first winter of getting my body more used to the cold, was still rough for me. I had to schedule the vast majority of my outdoor activity time before 10 a.m. or after sunset. So yeah, I did have to start getting up earlier to make this work. I did still stick to my 1+ hour of outdoor exposure and needed lots of tools to do that safely as it got warmer. Pre-cooling was my friend. I would take a mostly cool shower, then put on a light layer of merino wool. Even my underwear and bra were merino. I used a portable foot tub that I filled with ice water to keep me cool while I was sitting outside. I used fans. I drank cold water and ate cooling foods. I played with the hose while watering and in the kiddie pool with my dog. I took pictures or listened to podcasts or audiobooks to distract me from the heat. I did Ayurvedic breathing specifically for enhanced cooling and listened to cooling meditations and frequencies on YouTube. I wore a large, lightweight, breathable sun hat and sunglasses. I set a timer for 10 minutes so I could do regular body scans to make sure I was doing okay. This was really important for me because I can get so distracted by doing other things that all of a sudden too much time had passed since my last body scan. So using a timer was really helpful. I spent a lot of time that first summer under an umbrella or the canopy of the cherry and birch trees. My partner would check on me regularly if I didn't come inside every so often. Having a buddy looking out for us is always wise. But here's the thing. Even though I was still struggling that first summer with heat exposure, it only got bad a handful of times. And since I was regularly monitoring myself, I was ready for it. I was able to come inside and get cool quickly, so the symptoms would resolve in minutes rather than hours. And the joy I felt being able to be outside again, even if it wasn't yet in the afternoon heat, felt like a huge personal success. I experienced a significant mood boost, and I also gained a lot of confidence in myself in terms of my ability to better listen to the messages my body was sending me and in my ability to live a life I love even with an annoying health condition. By being able to do more of the things I loved and just getting a taste of summer again and enjoying it was very good for my physical and emotional well-being. I would be remiss if I didn't quickly mention a few things that really helped me get through that first year and that I recommend for anyone wanting to be outside more and live well with a chronic illness. First, I revisited The Mystic's Path, a beautiful book by my childhood friend Lindsay Para. This book is a simple yet powerful guide to living a good life despite any challenges we may face. Since the author also lives with chronic illnesses, she gets it, and many of her catalytic strategies resonated with me deeply. One of her gratitude practices in particular, which had quickly become an integral part of my day, is that daily sit spot. The concept is to sit in the same spot every single day, and this has, over time, truly become one of the single most important routines I still do for myself. Through this daily routine, rain or shine, on a comfy lounge chair that receives delightful morning sun, I have become more deeply connected to the land and to myself. And by spending at least an hour outside each day that first year, my body slowly began to change. Second, it was around this time when I really got into the PQ Mental Fitness program and started inviting folks from our shared MS community to try it too. In the program, the creator talked about immersion therapy, which is a psychological technique that uses a controlled environment to help people overcome fears, anxiety, and panic disorders. This type of therapy helps us build tolerance and reduce our anxiety response over time. This can help with mental health disorders, phobias like flying, or PTSD. And I paid close attention to this while researching the psychology and biology of heat sensitivity. And since I had already incorporated Wim Hof's cold blasts at the end of my showers to cool me off before blow drying my hair, which had helped me tremendously, I started researching what else I could do to help reduce my heat and cold intolerance and continue to increase my spectrum of comfort. At this point, I had also been working that year toward raising the temperature of my monthly salt floats to the normal temperature. It was more difficult once the warmer weather began, so getting a head start in winter was wise. By the time the real heat of the summer hit, I had worked up to being in the normal temperature without incident. Still to this day, I do sometimes leave the tank door open so it's less humid. Maybe one day that will change. But now I no longer had to call and ask ahead of time for them to lower the temperature for me. It's an accommodation I no longer require. Around this time, I was convinced by the few merino wool pieces that I had that it was time to get rid of my synthetic clothing. After wearing wool, I noticed that in synthetics, I couldn't breathe as well. My skin was more irritated. And I also learned around this time how synthetics actually trap moisture and even mold. And the plastics in the fabrics can be especially irritating to folks with sensitive skin, which I happen to be. So at this point, I started my transition fully to merino wool, almost exclusively. This was funny because to me, I had previously thought I might be allergic to wool since the wool I had tried before was very itchy. Turns out that wasn't merino wool or high quality wool. So, slowly over the next 2 years, since it's not cheap, I switched my wardrobe from synthetics to wool. Goodbye, yoga pants. Goodbye, so-called performance tees. Bronwyn undergarments became my first layer, and Woolex became the vast majority of my clothes, and PJs too. I'll post those links on our Patreon page, visible to all, if folks are interested. I think I may even have discount coupons I can share. Fast forward to now. Less than 10% of my wardrobe is still synthetic favorites, like my sports jerseys, or I also have a few 100% cotton or linen pieces, and one favorite Patagonia fleece jacket that I haven't worn now in 3 years, but also have yet to part ways with. Everything else is wool. By waiting for sales, utilizing customer appreciation points, Poshmark, and other resale sites, I've been able to make this change even on a fixed income. And since wool doesn't trap odors, I need less and can wear an item multiple times before washing, which has helped me conserve water and also other resources like my time, energy, and money. I'll also mention that Woolex is machine washable, so no hand washing or dry cleaning necessary. It's easy and simple. I continued on with my acclimatization efforts through the next winter and summer. Summer 24 was even easier. In fact, I didn't experience Uthoff's phenomenon at all. By this time, I was well tuned into my inner thermometer and quite good at listening to my body. Coming back inside every so often to refill my tumbler was enough of a respite and recharge, and I could even be outside in the afternoons. Now, mind you, I still wasn't terribly active in the afternoons. Dog walking and heavy yard work still happened earlier late in the day, but I could go with my partner to our local beer garden and be just fine. Yeah, I was hot, but no more hot than he was. And in fact, he'd get so sweaty sometimes that he eventually started experimenting with wool too. Now that's his go-to shirt for golfing and being outside in the heat. Fast forward to current time. I've now gone through 3 winters, and this is now my 3rd summer since I began my acclimatization efforts. Now I intuitively know how to make adjustments in the moment, and even more importantly, I don't need to make near as many adjustments now that my temperature range of comfort has drastically grown over time. There are even times when air conditioning feels too cold, which I honestly thought never could happen. Words can't express how comfortable I am now in my skin and how big of a difference this change has made in my life in terms of my overall happiness and quality of life. Most importantly, I'm outside in my happy place every single day. I still hang out in my daily sit spot, and I'm also able to spend more time being active in the garden. I can even lay in the sun again for short periods of time and get my vitamin D the old-fashioned way. I can play with the dogs and not have to worry about overexertion. I am now able to live a relatively normal outdoor life. Do I still get warm? Yes. Do I experience negative symptoms? It has been so long since that has happened that I can't even recall when it was. In many ways, I feel like I got my life back. Since then, I've grown in my confidence to drive longer distances alone, even in triple-digit weather. My mood is better, and I feel like I'm in a good place in terms of managing my MS symptoms. We're going to more outdoor concerts again, which is a big thing where we live. And unfortunately, there were many times we previously had to skip shows we really wanted to attend because it just didn't seem possible and definitely not safe. Now, for folks who don't love the outdoors as much as I do, this whole process might seem like an awful lot of effort just to get to be outside more. I get it. But if you're still listening, you just might be like me and have a very strong desire to see what's possible for you in terms of acclimatization and your ability to increase your temperature range of comfort. If you are someone who likes to be outside and MS heat sensitivity or cold sensitivity is preventing you from living your life in ways you love, then talking with your doctor to develop an acclimatization plan that's right for you might be well worth it. If you'd like support developing your thoughts and drafting a plan to share with your doctor, reach out. I'm happy to put my brain and a second set of eyes on it for you. Just think, by starting the planning process now, and starting deliberate acclimatization strategies when the summer heat starts to break this year, you might be in a dramatically different place next year, and down the road, rarely feel like you need to be limited by your climate. My hope today is that we all take some time to reflect on how our comfort in both hot and cold temperatures is impacted by our MS, and if there's any aspect of temperature regulation we'd like to improve upon. That we consider researching more about our own unique manifestations of heat and cold sensitivity, and explore ways we might safely and strategically increase our exposure slowly over time to see what's possible. And three, that we consult with our care team to firm up a safe, strategic plan for us to attempt mitigation of heat and cold sensitivity, as well as deliberate temperature acclimatization. To continue our conversation on heat and cold sensitivity and deliberate acclimatization, you are welcome to attend our Misunderstood Flock meetings via Zoom the first Saturday of each month. That's this Saturday on August 2nd. Flock members, I'd love to hear about your experience with heat and cold, both your struggles and what, if any, changes you've noticed over time with any acclimatization efforts you've made. If this episode inspires you to put together your own acclimatization plan, you might also bring that, as well as any questions you may have, to share with the group. If you're not yet a Flock member but would like to be, please join us. We are all people living with MS from around the world that meet via Zoom monthly to support each other and continue our learning on the episode topics. We also support each other through hardships and celebrate our successes together. You can learn more and join us by visiting our Patreon page. As always, I encourage all listeners to reach out with MS-related questions, comments, future podcast topics, or guest ideas. And lastly, remember, as we travel through life with MS, we're certain to hit some turbulence. We'll get through it, especially if we're flying together, supporting one another, and honking our encouragement. As always, thank you for listening. I hope this has been helpful. And until next time, be well.